I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Thursday to all of you. We are 2 radio days and three days away from Texans and Ravens. Couldn't be more excited about week two of the NFL season, and it'll be taking place at NRG Stadium. There will be Texans logos on the field. We know it'll be an empty stadium, but a big challenge coming up for the Texans, and we're getting
look,
you ready.
Playing at home matters still. It's I feel like people are acting like home field advantage doesn't matter at all anymore because there's no noise advantage.
As
just
I told
look at that 1.5 points from Vegas.
That's it. I was just gonna say, as I told you yesterday, the odds makers, the guys out in the desert, as Brent Musburger likes to call them, are still assigning about a 1.5 point differential, or one, they're giving the home team an extra 1.5 points on the spread. Usually it's 3 that they add to the home team when they make a spread for an NFL game, a betting line. As a former player, is there value in sleeping in your own bed and waking up in your own city? Or do you stay at a hotel the night before home games too?
It depends. Okay. Different coaches do it differently. Kubiak used to let the veteran guys sleep in their own beds the night before a home game, where the younger guys, like the rookies and the non-vested veterans, I think, would stay at the hotel. I liked being required to stay at the hotel the night before home games, just because if you had family visiting or anything else, it's such an easy way to just get away from any social pressure or anything, and you can keep your routine the same thing, you know?
Seth, can you imagine during the holidays when your relatives descend upon you, if you have the option of going and staying at a hotel,
the night before
Thanksgiving? I'd do it in a second.
It's not like you don't want to be with them or anything. Oh. Sometimes that's the case. Probably, majority of the time that's the case.
Peace and quiet,
even then,
though.
Yeah, you're trying to focus, you know, mm-hmm. especially if you got a noon kickoff, you want to get into your routine, just go to bed at the hotel, wake up. So, whatever. Some teams do it, some teams don't. But I think just the familiarity of being in your own environment, having your normal routine, all of that, the thing about football is it might seem like a small advantage, but it's compounded over 53 people.
Yeah.
So one tiny small advantage of playing at home compounded over 53 players ends up being a big difference. So, right. there's value of playing at NRG Plus. I'm going to be allowed in the stadium. You're going to be allowed in the stadium. Several of us from Sports Radio 610 will be watching, and we're not watching from the press box.
No.
Which means that I get to bring my rather loud voice to the table and provide crowd noise.
So Are
when
you
Lamar
sure?
Jackson,
Are
yeah,
you,
when look,
John McClain was ready to rip your credential from you yesterday if you cheered as a fan at the game.
Not going
to
happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, John. Well, yeah, because he errantly called me a journalist, which is I'm not. I've never claimed to be a journalist.
Not
one bit did I. Yeah. Claim to be a journalist. So, yeah, when Lamar Jackson has a delay of game penalty at the end of the second quarter, everybody can go ahead and tweet at me and
That's
thank
right.
me for me confusing by yelling so loud.
My goal all week has been to try to talk myself into this thing because, look, Seth, let's face it. There's two games really to there are three games that you essentially rewatch in order to get ready for this one, right? You rewatch the Texans game against the Chiefs from this past week. Because obviously that's the closest version of the Texans that you're going to get in terms of the personnel to what you're going to get this Sunday. You rewatch the Ravens and the Browns for the same reason. That was the Ravens in week one. And you rewatch last year's Ravens-Texans game. Like, those are the three games that are going to give you the most congruous look to what you're going to see, at least from a personnel standpoint and a performance standpoint. And none of those three games are anything that invokes super-duper confidence in what's going to take place on Sunday. So I've been trying to talk myself into this thing all week long, and I think you've done a pretty good job of trying to trend in a positive direction with this game.
Yeah, and I would add a fourth game to that, and it's the Titans' victory in the playoffs. Because that was the last team that beat the Ravens in a game that really mattered, that's more indicative of what this version of the Ravens is. The two games they lost in the regular season last year were very early on. One to Kansas City, like, makes sense, right? And then one to the Browns, very, very curious. So I went back and I watched the Titans game, and the Titans, you know, to boil it down in a nutshell, and we'll get into a lot of this later, so much of it just came down to, A, having Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill play very good games, and B, just playing sound fundamental football, yeah, and really being more physical at key and critical moments versus the Ravens. The Ravens love to go for it on fourth down in short yardage situations last year. You know, John Harbaugh famously just went full bore into the analytics of everything, and the Titans stopped them four times on fourth down when the Ravens went for it. If the Ravens had made two of those, it might have been a different story, but there's just a few physical battles you have to win, and we'll get into more of how exactly you do that in those short yardage situations. But it's certainly possible. The Browns beat this Ravens team last year. Yeah. The Browns,
the biggest joke of a franchise in professional sports, possibly. They beat the Ravens last year. All right, so Seth, we got our first injury report of the week, and good news. Son of P1 listener, Mr. Gillespie, is back. He is back in full participation. Cullen Gillespie, back on the field. Jonathan Grenard, back on the field. And that's, look, we don't know what Jonathan Grenard is, but they just need bodies whose forte is getting after the passer. I have no idea if Jonathan Grenard is somebody whose forte will be getting after the passer at the NFL level, but he was pretty good at it collegiately. They drafted him for a reason. That reason might be because a trade fell through with the Detroit Lions, but still, they drafted him for a reason, so they get Cullen Gillespie, Jonathan Grenard back, and Duke Johnson was back at practice yesterday. So that was good news, too. Good news on the injury front.
Grenard's a really bright guy. He is, however, a rookie, of course, so how much does that football intelligence factor in when you're playing in your first game, potentially, if he's on the active 53?
How much are you swimming as a rookie out there?
It depends. You know, that's really up to how much Anthony Weaver simplifies it for him, or just how much they can grasp. Because Grenard's a really mature guy. And, you know, remember, we talked to my old coach, Todd Grantham, my old position coach, who was his defensive coordinator at Florida. And, you know, he gushes about just his maturity and his intelligence and all that. That's huge versus Lamar Jackson, because so much of it this week is going to come down to Whitney Merciless, Brennan Scarlett, Jonathan Grenard, sometimes Jacob Martin, those guys on the edge, how disciplined are they? Are you not like letting Lamar Jackson get an open gate to the sideline, whether it's a pass or a run? Yeah. You know, are you containing him and compressing the pocket? And getting Lamar Jackson on the ground isn't as important as just compressing the pocket and making it uncomfortable for him as a passer. He's made a lot of progress as a passer, but he's still not, you know, he's not Russell Wilson back there yet. He's not Ben Roethlisberger. He's not one of these guys that's a pure NFL passer yet. He's still a young quarterback. So a disciplined pass rush that just makes him even a little bit uncomfortable while you simultaneously stop the run. Those are tall orders, but that's what you got to do.
Yeah, no, they're a hard team to play, but you're right. That's exactly what the recipe entails, at least part of the recipe of beating this team. Look, they're a really good team on both sides of the football. So the Texans are going to have to play a lot less sloppy than they did, especially in the first half of that game in Baltimore last year. Boy, Seth, I like you, I rewatched that game. I rewatched the condensed version of it last night. What a sloppy game early on. If the Texans just played clean football, early in that game, they might have gotten a lead in that game, which, who knows? We know that getting a lead against Lamar Jackson yields maybe a much different game flow than falling behind against these guys, where they still have the whole playbook available to them.
Yeah, and it's not quite the same as like when you try to keep the ball out of Pat Mahomes' hands or Tom Brady's hands. I'd imagine that Clint and I will have a little bit of an argument about this afternoon, because, you know, Clint is not a fan of the keep it out of the other quarterback's hands mentalities. I'm all for it, and I think that part of that is, like, as a defensive player, the more times you have to face a guy like Mahomes, the more times he has to figure you out. With Lamar Jackson, it's more that their best mode of play is kind of a rhythmic, grinded out, steadily march down the field. So it's hard for them to score points really, really quickly. And the fewer possessions they have once you get a lead, it's unlikely that they're going to be able to do it before time runs out. Or at least that's the theory. I don't feel good about that theory, Sean. You know, frankly, it's worked like once, twice for them last year.
Right.
But it's like one of the only things we've seen that works, so might as well go for it.
So you are on with Clint in the show at 3:30 on Thursdays is when you make your appearance on there, correct?
3:30 Thursdays. Yeah, I haven't been as good since I quit drinking. I used to – usually I'd go on that show, and by then, you know, I was already starting my weekend on Thursday afternoon. And,
quit?
We had a good old loose time. Now I'm pretty sober.
Quit drinking, or you're on a hiatus from drinking?
I don't know. Okay. I might have quit drinking altogether.
Wow, really? Okay.
Eh. Okay. I take that back. I'm not drinking.
This is like Macho Man Randy Savage saying, "I'm not doing the flying elbow anymore."
This is what I think long term. Yeah, I think long term, what I'm going to end up in is I'm not going to drink at home.
There you
anymore.
Go.
And especially not drink at home by myself.
Yeah. Boundaries.
I don't always like. Why do people make such a big deal out of that?
I don't know. It's underrated.
There's a huge downside to it, and that's one of the reasons I've had to stop. But as far as when you're actually doing it, people always paint it out as this depressing thing. Like, my God, no, it's delightful.
Yeah,
it's not. Yeah, it doesn't have to be like Johnny Cash at his darkest moment while he's sitting in a dark hotel room.
No.
It's like, hey, I'm gonna watch The Office and have a good time.
Yeah, watch The Office. Yeah. Little 80s pop music playing in the background. You know, it's nice stuff.
Yeah.
On a day where the Astros lost to the woeful Rangers, they actually had one of their best days yesterday if they're going to have any chance in the postseason. We'll explain next.
His fastball was up to 96 tonight, and he had good command with it. I mean, he's thrown, that's the best he's thrown, you know, since he had that no-hitter into the fifth inning. You know, he was sharp tonight. I mean, he was really, really sharp tonight, and you know, that was a positive side of it. You know, you love to see, you know, your pitcher throwing like that. You know, we took him as far as we could take him, you know, especially since he hadn't been out throwing much. But, I mean, he was sharp. He was really sharp.
That was Dusty Baker talking about Lance McCullers last night. The Astros lose the battle last night. They lose 1-0 to the Rangers. But maybe the bigger news, Seth, if I could have said, hey, they're going to lose this game, but you're going to get 7 shutout innings with no walks and 8 strikeouts out of Lance McCullers. What are you taking? You can either take a win where McCullers looks however he's going to look, or you get a loss, but we're going to guarantee you that Lance McCullers looks like the McCullers you thought you were getting when he was coming off of Tommy John surgery in that short training camp where he was dominating the Kansas City Royals. I said, you know what? I think they're going to finish in second place in this division anyways. I'll sacrifice this game, and I will take the performance from Lance McCullers last night. And Seth Payne, I will give you credit right here. Yesterday, I asked the question, if Verlander is back, we know it's going to be Greinke and Verlander in some permutation starting the first two games of a wild card series. Who starts game 3 for you? Framber Valdez, Jose Urquidy, or Lance McCullers? You, my friend, I don't know if it's because you're a loyal friend of Lance McCullers or because it's God bless you, that's how you feel, but you said Lance McCullers, I said Jose Urquidy, and I am learning that I am the most disloyal person of all time because I'm flipping over to McCullers. I'm team McCullers now after last night. 7 innings pitch, shutout ball. That was good to see.
Well, we're talking about, you had to remember, we're talking about what would we do in the postseason.
Right.
And like Lance McCullers, there's two elements to this. One is that when Lance has skidded this year, it's really two notable incidents, you know, where he let up 3 runs without pitching an actual inning.
That was the game that sent him to the injured list. That was the game where he had the neck issue. Yeah.
And then there was the Diamondbacks game where he let up 7-8 runs, and that was a weird game where it's just the strange field and caromed balls all over the place.
Yep.
If you take out those games, and actually even, let's say since that Arizona game, he's got about a 2.4 ERA.
Okay.
And that includes the 0 innings that he pitched in his last time out. So that's the one side of it, is he's actually performed pretty well. And the other side of it is that, yeah, that last time where he let up those 3 runs without pitching an actual inning, It was nerve related. It was whatever was going on with his neck. So you get a cortisone injection, and which is a one off. Sometimes maybe that's all you need is to get an injection. You never want to do it chronically, but sometimes it's all you need to calm something down. And it looked like the old Lance. I mean, he only threw 7 changeups last night. And I'm not saying he should completely go away from his changeup because it's working for him when it works for him. But he's kind of, barring that neck issue he had, he's rediscovered his curveball and he's reminded himself, yeah, that's, look, this is my bread and butter. This is what I'm really good at. This is what I'm going to crush people with.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to see him look a lot more like himself over the remainder of this shortened season.
Yeah, I just needed to see it with my own eyes, which is why I said Urquidy yesterday. Urquidy's pitched well since he's come back. They, you know, it'd be great if they had some options. Seth, it would be great if they had options, especially, look, we cannot obviously count on anything from Verlander at this point, even though the report from Dusty Baker was a good one yesterday.
You know, that's his normal routine, to throw 45 to 50 pitches in the bullpen prior to coming out, you know, so... You know, any Verlander is better than no Verlander. So, but again, you know, we just have to see how he, you know, comes out of this.
So he looked good in his most recent pitching on the side. I guess there was a plan for him. I guess, did he pitch to hitters? I think he threw like 25 pitches to actual hitters. When I saw who the hitters were, Seth, I'm like, oh yeah, this is a real good facsimile of who he's going to be pitching to. It was Abraham Toro, Jack Mayfield, and Miles Straw, I think.
Sean,
I'm like, yeah,
I will remind you.
Him ready for the Yankees.
Sean, I'll remind you that Abraham Toro was considered to be as good as Kyle Tucker in Dusty Baker's mind earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
This
you know that verb you just used? That was a past tense, is what they call that. Was considered.
Well, no. And I also said in Dusty Baker's mind.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody else really believed that. I think largely, for anybody that's going to try to revise their Kyle Tucker takes, I think there are a lot of people out there that early this season were saying, look, you got to at least find out what Kyle Tucker is. Can we please start giving some of these Abraham Toro at-bats to Kyle Tucker?
I know.
You know? Kyle Tucker last night showing his one of our listeners, remember, that had told me, hey, Seth, your Kyle Tucker take about him having to gain 5-10 pounds sounds kind of stupid right now, doesn't it? Because he's hitting for power.
Yeah.
He's coming to his own. But also, if he had gained that weight, I don't know if he would be quite as fast as he is. And when he almost stole second last night, he almost got away with it for that bastard replay review.
Yeah.
He looked awful fast.
Yeah, he was speedy. So the Astros,
that was one of my worst long going takes, by the way. My take that all Kyle Tucker needed to do was gain 5 or 10 pounds, probably just by way of creatine.
Seth,
he's fine.
Let's not get swept up in the same season. Like, I know it feels like Kyle Tucker has strung this really long stretch of good baseball together. It's been like 3 weeks. You know what I mean? Like, I know it feels like a lot because it's been half the season, but the jury is still out as to whether or not anybody is going to be right or wrong on Kyle Tucker takes. I know it feels like it's been a long stretch of baseball because it's been a month, and a month comprises more than half of this particular season. But let's let it all play out here with Kyle Tucker.
But look, okay, I mean, just there was a point at which we were saying the same thing about Alex Bregman. Could he's gotten off to his 0-for-25 start or whatever the hell it was.
Right.
And it felt like, okay, well, let's wait and see.
Yeah.
And ultimately it all worked out. I think the fact that Jeff Luhnow, James Click, so many people in baseball thought so highly of Kyle Tucker, I feel like, okay, this, look, he's going to have some slumps. It is Major League Baseball, but I feel pretty good about it.
Counterpoint, Tyler White, player of the month 2 Julys ago. Just to kind of, and I know Kyle Tucker's a former top 5 pick, and Tyler White is some guy they pulled off of a beer league softball team. I'm just saying, there are small samples where you got to get a bigger sample before you realize the guy is either good or he's bad.
Let's see. I just randomly picked, like, okay, when was it, mid-August or so? I went back to August 18th. This is completely, not totally random, but I didn't, like, try to cherry-pick the best window.
Right.
Since August 18th through September 15th, so right about four total weeks.
Month, yeah.
He's got an OPS of 1.027.
That's really, really good. It's really good.
Hitting .299, on-base percentage .361.
Yeah.
So it's been a month, you know?
I know. Which in any other year would feel like nothing, and in this year it feels like an eternity because the season's 60 games.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like I might have randomly selected the absolute best time to start that.
That was a good job by you. Don't say that out loud. You sounded super smart just now.
I'm the rain man of the baseball world, which is hard to do because there are a lot of rain man types that like baseball.
During the break, Seth is going to go get Kyle Tucker's barrel rate during that time. If you could go if you could go find that would be really good.
Sean, throw some toothpicks on the floor. I'll tell you how many there are.
I think we've been a little...
Okay, it's 27. So count them up. Watch. This is radio. We can do this.
Like,
nobody knows that.
Here you go. Seth, toothpicks. 81, 81, 81. 243. So the quarterback battle this week, I think we really need to dig into this quarterback battle. These two guys, along with Patrick Mahomes, are the guys who are going to carry this league into the next 10 years. Lamar Jackson versus Deshaun Watson. We compare the two of them in eight key categories. It is a tale of the tape on Payne and Pendergast next. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. Good to be with you on a Thursday, everybody. It's game week. Ravens, Texans on Sunday. 3:25 kickoff, 12:25 Texans countdown to kickoff with me and Seth Payne, and then the postgame show following the game with me and Clint Sterner. Hopefully a very, very happy Sunday in store for all of us. It's that late window, so you get your 8 or 9 game appetizer of other NFL games, and then you get the Texans and the Ravens in the afternoon. So it should be fun. Seth, this is I would say this is a battle of two of the best young quarterbacks in the league. I don't think that's a stretch to say that. Lamar Jackson, defending MVP. Deshaun Watson, really good quarterback who just got paid. The three quarterbacks who get sort of, I think, bunched in with each other are Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, and I'll put Deshaun Watson in there. And if people are listening from Baltimore or Kansas City, they probably think maybe we're overstepping a little bit by doing that because, hey, look, Deshaun has not won an MVP like our two guys here yet. But I think if you did a dispersal draft of the NFL, you let all the teams just draft players, you know what I mean? Like, just, we're doing a redraft of the league. The first three guys picked would be Patrick Mahomes would be one for sure. And then I think there's an argument to be made as to who would be number two, Lamar Jackson or Deshaun Watson around the league. Some of those polls that we've seen this offseason, whether it's the NFL Top 100, which is very unscientific polls, subjective polls of their peers, or some of those things like Mike Sando and all the anonymous executive stuff that comes with the QB tiers and things like that. Depending on which audience you're talking to, you know, if you talk to players, a lot of them say Lamar. If you talk to a lot of executives, they say Deshaun. It's a real debate between these two guys right now.
I think that I think even most learned Ravens fans feel this way that I'm about to say. I think that even though Lamar and Deshaun are different types of quarterbacks, I think a lot of people, you could realistically say, wow, imagine if Deshaun were in the Ravens system, how much better he'd have been. Now, that doesn't mean that he would be better than Lamar Jackson. It would be more passing, less running. You know, the balance would be a little bit different. But I think that a lot of people around the league feel that way, too. Okay, Pat Mahomes is a whole different scenario because his arm is so ridiculously good. And I don't know if there's like maybe several NFL quarterbacks in history that have had arms like his. So if you get down to everybody else right now, yeah, Deshaun, if he went to Baltimore, probably would have had a better last couple seasons. Certainly if he'd gone to Kansas City. I'm not saying he could have done what Pat Mahomes has done, but he certainly would have been better than what he's been right here. So I think the perception is, yeah, Deshaun's a great young quarterback, but he's just not in a great situation.
Right. Yeah, or at least not in
this. That is my opinion, but I think that's probably consensus around the league.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's not the worst situation, but it's not as good a situation as the two guys that he's being compared to all the time, Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes. So let's do this, Seth. This was your idea, and I like this a lot. Let's just do a tale of the tape of these two guys, of Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson. Ben, give us a little mood music underneath this here. All right, there we go.
What music is this?
This is called Dramatic Football Music.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
101.
I was waiting for my Drinking at Home Alone music. That wasn't that was the Johnny Cash. But this isn't Johnny Cash.
Some
this is
goth,
actually good music.
Some goth, some dark.
Johnny Cash is really good music, but not for this.
Yeah, not for these purposes. Yeah. Let's start with throwing accuracy, Seth. We'll start with some of the really football-y stuff here. The throwing accuracy. Who is a more accurate passer, Deshaun Watson or Lamar Jackson?
I think Deshaun Watson is, and I think this is another one that even Ravens fans wouldn't argue with you on. I think when it comes to especially deep ball accuracy and touch, I think Deshaun's got a lot of young quarterbacks beat on that. It's just that Lamar Jackson does such an incredible job through that scheme of getting guys open, and he's able to put the ball just where Mark Andrews, the tight end, can catch it or something like that. But it's not because he necessarily has incredible accuracy. So I'll give Deshaun has the edge over Lamar Jackson in throwing accuracy.
I agree with you. I will give Lamar credit. I think one of the hardest things for a quarterback to improve when they get to the league is accuracy. Seth, the graveyard is full of quarterbacks who are inaccurate at the collegiate level, who guys, coaches, coordinators, position coaches thought they could make more accurate once they got into the league. I call it the Jake Locker trophy for each, you know, there's a quarterback every year that I feel like is inaccurate in college that people feel like has so many other things going for them. They feel like if we just get him more accurate, accuracy is the one thing that really doesn't translate. I think Josh Allen is a good example of that. Look, Josh Allen had a really good year last year. If he doesn't become more accurate throwing the football, the Buffalo Bills are never going to get to where they want to get to. Lamar Jackson's got more accurate. He was a 58% passer his rookie year, 66% last year. And if you just watch him from play to play, he throws into tight windows. He's unorthodox. Yeah. He throws a lot of sidearm, a lot of submarine pitching going on out there, but he puts the ball where it needs to be.
I do think that the old belief about changing a player's accuracy is changing a little bit just because the college game has turned into such a, you know, receive the snap, get it out of your hands fast, that there's not as much of a priority on good throwing mechanics. There's not as much of a priority on really setting up and taking your time and throwing in rhythm in college anymore. So when guys like Dak Prescott get to the league, I think when guys like Josh Allen get into the league, they have improved somewhat. And Josh Allen, the weird thing is, Sean, he's actually pretty good at the short and intermediate stuff. But the thing that everybody gushes about is how, like, strong his arm is. That's where he really, really sucks. Yeah. It's when he's got a wide receiver, when John Brown is wide open and he misses him by 8 yards.
He did it three or four times in the game against the Jets this Sunday. They should have won that game by 30. Josh Allen fumbled twice in the red zone and he missed wide open receivers in the end zone. All right, next category. Let's stay on Watson versus Jackson. Running effectiveness as a runner. Seth, as good a runner as Deshaun Watson is, I feel like this is a category where we know what it is, but maybe you've got something different on this.
No, and I think that it's obviously Lamar Jackson. I mean, he ran for 1,200 yards last year.
Maybe
Running backs don't run for 1,200 yards anymore.
I thought maybe nerd Seth would have some sort of efficiency rating about Deshaun or something.
No. And if anything, I'll stack on top like more positives than most people would when it comes to his running. Look, he takes some hits, but I think the scheme and Lamar Jackson himself do a really good job of not getting him hit as often as an old-school running quarterback would. You know, I think his QB sweeps, he's either, you know, it's either going to be a big run or he's going to run out of bounds. Up the middle, I think for the most part, he doesn't try real super hard to break tackles when it's in the middle of the field or when it's early in the game. I think he's pretty smart about not taking those big hits. So, the more hits you take, the more chance there is of getting injured. At some point, he's going to get injured in the NFL like everybody will. But I would take the level of contact that Lamar Jackson gets right now than if he were, say, a young Ben Roethlisberger who just would stand back there like an armored mobile unit or something and just take shot after shot after shot.
Yeah, or Cam Newton, where they're running him like he's Natron Means. You know, they're running him between the tackles and he's lowering the shoulder. All right, so we are 1-1 right now. So Deshaun Watson has one category. Lamar Jackson has one category. We're doing a tale of the tape, Lamar Jackson versus Deshaun Watson. Seth, next category. It's an important one, and this may be a really important one if the Texans are going to win this game on Sunday. The deep ball. Who throws the better deep? I feel like the stats are on the side of Deshaun Watson in this, who is, by most measures, one of the better or best deep ball throwers in football. What say you?
Well, we talked about accuracy. But I'm not talking about accuracy here. I'm just talking about, like, okay, who's scarier with the deep ball? And I'm going to say that right now, again, because of the offense, because of how much Lamar Jackson scares the crap out of secondaries with his legs, that I'm more scared. I think you should be more scared of the deep ball that the Ravens have with Lamar Jackson than the deep ball with Deshaun Watson. We saw what Kansas City did. You know, Kansas City, through a good mixing and matching of coverages and playing zone at appropriate times, they took away the deep ball in that game. So it doesn't matter how accurate Deshaun is, he's not going to have as many wide open opportunities, especially now that teams can key in on Will Fuller. You don't have any DeAndre Hopkins to take attention away from Will Fuller. Lamar Jackson in that Ravens system and the way he plays football scares me more with his deep ball.
Seth, I don't know if you know this, but the Texans signed Randall Cobb this offseason. I'm not sure if you were aware, mostly because he didn't really show up till there were 5 minutes left in the game against Kansas City. Anyways, let's move on.
Yeah.
fourth quarter clutch gene. I have a strong opinion on this, and I have highlights to back up my opinion on this, but this is a tale of the tape of your categories here, Seth. Do you want me to just play my randomly selected group of highlights for this to lay out the fourth quarter clutch gene in
yes,
this? Because these,
yes,
two,
yes,
have, these two have faced off in a game at the collegiate level that went that came down to the fourth quarter. They, when the year that Lamar Jackson won the Heisman Trophy, I think some could argue that if you took that vote after the season, it would have been Deshaun Watson winning that because he had a national championship that, that he won after the postseason was over. Nevertheless, they faced off against each other, Louisville versus Clemson, two ACC schools. If we recall, here was Deshaun Watson trailing late in the game, making a play.
Flag comes in, a free play. Watson fires back. Catches Leggett open, Leggett rumbling, free down inside the 10, scores!
Touchdown, got the two-point conversion. Clemson takes a lead. Lamar Jackson and Louisville get the ball back. They've got a 4th-and-12 they have to convert. Here's what happens.
Got to get to the 2-yard line to keep hope alive. Jackson flips it short, quick, works free, fights, spins out of bounds, did not get there. Did not get there. Came up a yard short.
Just a yard short. That clutch gene in the fourth quarter. Oh, and do I need to remind people that Deshaun Watson had engineered maybe one of the most important touchdowns in modern football history at the end of the national championship game?
Be the final play of the college season, perhaps, if Clemson gets a touchdown to win it. If Bama can hold him out, perhaps a field goal attempt for overtime. Watson, touchdown!
What did you tell your team in the huddle before the final drive?
What I tell them all the time, don't panic. It's going to be special. It's going to be great. We built for moments like this. And let's go finish it.
Seth, I'm telling you right now, just having gone through and watched some of those highlights and watched the interview with Deshaun after the national championship game, it was a good tonic for feeling, you know, if you're feeling pessimistic about things with the Texans. It was a good reminder, like, okay, this kid's really good. He's come up in some really big moments. There are going to be good moments in the future. I don't know who the players are around him. I don't know who the coaching staff is going to be. I just know Deshaun Watson is going to be here for the next 6 seasons at least, and there are good moments ahead. I don't know if it's going to be this Sunday, but there are good moments ahead. All right, so that Seth, that's the randomly selected evidence that I gave for this particular category of the fourth quarter clutch gene.
Look, the and then when it comes to the NFL, look, Deshaun Watson has 8 fourth quarter comebacks in his relatively short career.
Yeah.
He hasn't even had 3 full seasons yet. Whereas Lamar Jackson only has 1 fourth quarter comeback.
Mostly now, because they're ahead by 30 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, okay. I mean, yeah, there's if you want to quibble about details, Sean, then yes, he hasn't had opportunities for fourth quarter comebacks because they've been ahead by so much.
Actually, it is his fault. Stop getting so many big leads, Lamar Jackson. Yeah.
He has had three game-winning drives, if you include the Cincinnati game last year when he had a fourth quarter comeback, and then 2 game-winning drives in close games, Baltimore at Pittsburgh last year, in Baltimore versus San Francisco in December of last year. So 6-1, half dozen of the other. They're both really good quarterbacks, but Deshaun has simply been in more situations.
That's right.
You know, and Deshaun was on a better team in college. Deshaun has been in more situations. So he's just by experience alone and then him demonstrating greatness in those moments. Yeah, I got to give this to Deshaun.
All right, let's rapid fire these. They're 2-2 right now. We're doing a tale of the tape, Deshaun Watson versus Lamar Jackson. They each have seized 2 categories. Seth, next category, proving the haters wrong ability.
Yeah. Again, you know, I just said Deshaun's had more opportunities for fourth quarter comebacks and in big moments in the NFL. I think Lamar Jackson's had way more opportunity to prove the haters wrong.
Yes.
Because as much as, look, every great athlete these days wants to act like nobody believed they could do it. You know, Kevin Durant acted like nobody thought he was a good basketball player when he won the MVP. Frankly, Deshaun's been pegged as a great quarterback since his sophomore year in high school. Whereas all along the way with Lamar Jackson, until last year, there was no shortage of haters, doubters, skeptics who thought that he couldn't make it as a quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, and he's clearly, I think once you win the MVP for quarterback, I believe like that summarily puts that debate to rest. So I have to say Lamar Jackson because he had so many opportunities to do it.
Seth,
as a more proving the haters wrong ability.
We can net this one out real simply. Nobody was saying Deshaun Watson should be a running back coming into the NFL. There were scouts and coaches saying that Lamar Jackson should change positions, that he shouldn't play quarterback in the league.
You know what I'll say, though, too, Sean? I feel like that's been misrepresented a little bit because I know some people – I see people getting piled on who said that, look, you never know if a quarterback's going to work out. So if it doesn't work out, this guy's got he's got better speed than wide receivers, which is like that's different than saying he shouldn't be a quarterback. It's a, look, number one overall picks at quarterback sometimes don't work out. And usually those guys, like let's say, I don't know, Carson Palmer, if he hadn't worked out as a quarterback, he wasn't going to be a running back or a wide receiver.
All right, let's get to the next category. Lamar Jackson leads 3-2 in our tail of the tape. Best signature play. Seth, I found a signature play for each of these. We can debate and discuss whether this is the signature play for Deshaun, but if I'm trying to compete in a signature play bracket and I'm Deshaun Watson, I would pick one where you almost lose a body play.
First and goal at the 9. Deshaun calls for the ball. Here's the snap. Watson looking. Pocket collapsing. Watson trying to get away. He does to the right. Throws to the end zone. Caught by Fells. Magical. Touchdown, Houston. And the Texans take the lead.
Andy giving me chills again. I love that. That was the play where Deshaun Watson got his eyeball nearly kicked out of his skull, throwing the game-winning touchdown against the Raiders. Seth, he adjusted his helmet in the middle of the play when he got kicked in the face. It was a killer play.
What would have been more inspiring if he'd actually gotten the eyeball kicked out? Would Jason Pierre-Paul's comeback be more inspiring, or would the one-eyed quarterback be more inspiring?
Interesting. I feel like you need eyes just as much as a pass rusher needs fingers. We'll do a tail of the tape on that one later. Let's get to Lamar Jackson's signature play. We don't watch Lamar Jackson every week, so I'm just – this was off of memory. I remember him making a play in a game where you go, okay, holy cow, this is going to be a really scary era to live in here. This is Lamar Jackson. Listen to this run against the Cincinnati Bengals.
Jackson sets in the pistol, sends his tight end Nick Boyle to the slot right. Jackson will keep it on the read option. He's got it at the 40, 35, spins at the 30. He's got room, 20. Lamar Jackson, 10, 5, touchdown Ravens! Lamar Jackson with the spin, the sprint, and the score!
The play-by-play, no offense to Sandusky, who does the play-by-play for the Ravens, it didn't do it justice. The spin on that, if you go Google Lamar Jackson great plays, that's the one that comes up first. It was a 47-yard touchdown run, granted against the Bengals, but the spin move that he describes in that play was absolutely sublime. Seth, who wins that category for you?
That's Deshaun Watson.
Yes.
By just his ability to do it. It's almost like Carlos Correa making incredible defensive plays. You can almost dial it up or expect it at any given point. I would have put as my signature play the Buffalo Buffalo ping pong or pinball play from last year.
Yeah. It was a tough choice between those two. I went on the play where I went with him almost losing an eyeball. So either
yeah,
one.
And I think he has several more like that you could point to. So again, this kind of goes in the same as the clutch gene part of it.
Yeah.
Deshaun's just got a greater body of work.
Yeah, no, he gets chased around a lot more than Lamar Jackson does because of his offensive line. Deshaun has a lot more opportunities for signature plays because the pocket collapses on him a lot more than it does for Lamar Jackson. All right, so Seth, these two guys are tied at 3. This is as close as we can get. So Seth, the tiebreaker category, who's more handsome?
Oh, and before anybody says that this is a frivolous category, I'll remind you of that study that was out a few years ago that showed that, in general, Hall of Fame quarterbacks are more handsome than the average quarterbacks. Got a little something to do with that whole charisma, that whole quarterback personality and whatnot. Is there anybody that's going to debate this? I feel like any, you know, barstool slut in Baltimore is still going to choose Deshaun Watson over Lamar Jackson.
I think so, too. Just a more symmetrical face, I think. You know,
he's a handsome, dashing guy. He could be starring in movies in Hollywood, Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, so Deshaun Watson, on the basis of his beautiful face, beats Lamar Jackson in the tail of the tape. It's about as close as you can get. Seth, it's as close as that. When that referee had to pull out a note card to see if they got the first down, they had to slide a note card in between the football and the chains to see if they got a first down. That's how close this thing was.
Yeah.
But because Deshaun Watson has superior facial genes, he's the winner in our tail of the tape.
That's really what it – hey, look, this is not a frivolous category.
No.
All kinds of studies show that, in general, it's not fair, but the more handsome person or the prettier lady ends up, on average, it works to their favor.
That's your tiebreaker. My tiebreaker would be Deshaun Watson is bringing cheesesteaks to Houston. It's a tiebreaker. He wins.
That's
true.
Oh, so if we went down to their business ventures, Deshaun Watson and his bringing of cheesesteaks
here
in his commercials. What's Lamar Jackson have going on the
business? He's got his own brand called Era 8, which sells a ton of stuff on Fanatics. Like, if we're just talking about a business venture, it's a really good business venture. He sells iPhone cases. Yes, it's his own brand.
Oh, it's his brand?
era
oh,
aid.
Oh, that's damn smart. So he's like a successful, like a more professional version of the Ball family.
Yeah, he's a Ball family that actually has his bleep together. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
It's pretty
boy.
Good.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Too late.
That's smart.
Contest closed. DeJuan wins.
Man,
handsomeness.
I'll tell you what. Okay. All right. I might have to revisit that. That's
handsome.
A hell of a...
He's handsome. Better looking. He's gonna make beautiful babies.
Yeah, but okay, but who's better looking, like your average male model or Elon Musk? You know, Elon's a little bit more successful financially.
Tale of the tape, Elon Musk versus random Abercrombie and Fitch model. That's next.
Abercrombie and Fitch model or, I don't know, who's Jack Welch.
All right. Where did Deshaun's week one stack up? And what errant QB conclusions are people drawing after 1 week around the league? There are quite a few. We will get into those next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.